strongly believe that the role of those of us in Washington, one role is to confront problems. That's what we got to do. Yes, ma'am.
Mr. President, you've been thinking a lot about pandemic flu and the risks in the United States if that should occur. I was wondering, Secretary Leavitt has said that first responders in the states and local governments are not prepared for something like that. To what extent are you concerned about that after Katrina and Rita? And is that one of the reasons you're interested in the idea of using defense assets to respond to something as broad and long-lasting as a flu might be?
Yes. Thank you for the question. I am concerned about avian flu. I'm concerned about what an avian flu outbreak could mean for the United States and the world. I have thought through the scenarios of what an avian flu outbreak could mean. I tried to get a better handle on what the decision-making process would be by reading Mr. Berry's book on the influenza outbreak in 1918. I would recommend it. The policy decisions for a president in dealing with an avian flu outbreak are difficult. One example, if we had an outbreak somewhere in the United States, do we not then quarantine that part of the country? And how do you then enforce a quarantine? One thing to shut down airplanes. It's another thing to prevent people from coming in to get exposed to the avian flu. And who best to be able to effect a quarantine? One option is the use of a military that's able to plan and move. And so that's why I put it on the table. I think it's an important debate for Congress to have. I noticed the other day evidently some governors didn't like it. I understand that. I was the commander-in-chief of the National Guard, and proudly so. And frankly, I didn't want the president telling me how to be the commander-in-chief of the Texas Guard. But Congress needs to take a look at circumstances that may need to vest the capacity of the president to move beyond that debate. And one such catastrophe or one such challenge could be an avian flu outbreak. Secondly, wait a minute, this is an important subject. Secondly, during my meetings at the United Nations, not only did I speak about it publicly, I spoke about it privately to as many leaders as I could find, about the need for there to be awareness, one, of the issue, and two, reporting, rapid reporting to WHO so that we can deal with a potential pandemic. The reporting needs to be not only on the birds that have fallen ill, but also on tracing the capacity of the virus to go from bird to person to person. That's when it gets dangerous, when it goes bird, person, person. And we need to know on a real-time basis as quickly as possible the facts so that the scientific community, the world scientific community, can analyze the facts and begin to deal with it. Obviously, the best way to deal with a pandemic is to isolate it and keep it isolated in the region in which it begins. As you know, there's been a lot of reporting of different flocks that have fallen ill with the H5N1 virus. And we've also got some cases of the virus being transmitted to person, and we're watching very carefully. Thirdly, the development of a vaccine. I've spent time with Tony Fauci on the subject. Obviously, it would be helpful if we had a breakthrough and the capacity to develop a vaccine that would enable us to feel comfortable here at home that not only would first responders be able to be vaccinated, but as many Americans as possible and people around the world. But unfortunately, there is a we're just not that far down the manufacturing process. And there's a spray, as you know, that can maybe help arrest the spread of the disease, which is in relatively limited supply. So one of the issues is how do we encourage the manufacturing capacity of the country and maybe the world to be prepared to deal with the outbreak of a pandemic. In other words, can we surge enough production to be able to help deal with the issue? I take this issue very seriously, and I appreciate you bringing it to our attention. The people of the country ought to rest assured that we're doing everything we can. We're watching it. We're careful. We're in communications with the world. I'm not predicting an outbreak. I'm just suggesting to you that we better be thinking about it, and we are, and we're more than thinking about it. We're trying to put plans in place, and one of the plans, back to where your original question came, was, you know, if we need to take some, you know, significant action, how best to do so? And I think the president ought to have all options on the table to understand, you know, what the consequences are, but all assets on the table, like not options, assets on the table to be able to deal with something this significant. Deborah. Thanks. Good to see you. Mike, please.
Thank you.
Unless you don't want to be heard in New York, your question.
Well, there's always that possibility. Yeah. Many conservative women lawyers have expressed their extreme distress that you chose as a woman nominee for the court someone whose credentials did not come close, in their view, to the credentials of John Roberts. They feel as though it's kind of old-fashioned affirmative action. Women don't have the same credentials. I wonder if you could address that.
Sure, thanks. I would ask them to watch the hearings of Harriet Myers. I think they will become as impressed with her as I have become. She is plenty bright. She, as I mentioned earlier, she was a pioneer in Texas. She just didn't kind of opine about things. She actually led. First woman of the Texas Bar Association, first woman of the Dallas Bar Association, first woman partner of her law firm. She led a major law firm. She was consistently rated as one of the top 50 women lawyers in the United States, not just one year, but consistently rated that way, and as one of the top 100 lawyers. Now, secondly, I can understand people not, knowing Harriet. She hasn't been, you know, one of these publicity hounds. She's been somebody just quietly does her job. But when she does it, she performs. See? She's not a person in Texas saying, look at me, look at how stellar I have been. She just did it. And quietly established an incredibly strong record. And I know her. I know her heart. I know what she believes. Remember, she was part of the search committee that helped pick Roberts. And she went to the deliberations and the talking to these different candidates about what they believe. She knows exactly the kind of judge I'm looking for. And I know exactly the kind of judge she'll be, which is an excellent judge. And so I know people are jumping to all kinds of conclusions. And that's fine. That's part of our process, you know. People are quick to opine. The thing I appreciate is that she's gotten a good reception on the United States Senate. People opine all they want. But the final opinion is at the floor of the United States Senate. That's where it's going to be decided whether or not she is a Supreme Court judge. And I'm hopeful she'll get confirmed. I certainly don't want to prejudge the senators. Somebody asked me about trying to avoid, you know, conflict. That's up to them to decide how they're going to treat this good woman. That's up to them if they're going to be willing to give her a fair look at her credentials and to listen carefully to her view of what it means to be a judge. That's up to them to make that decision. It's up to them to decide whether or not they want to reject all the special interest money that seems to want to try to influence the outcome of certain issues here in Washington, D.C. It's up to them if they want to bring dignity to the process. I'll assure you this, Harriet Myers will bring dignity to the bench. Ann first.
Following up on that, for 10 years, you've been on the receiving end of paperwork from Harriet Myers, but the rest of the American people haven't seen either her command of constitutional issues or her philosophy. Will you release some of her or the bulk of her White House legal work and not claim executive privilege?
Listen, first of all, this is a part of the Roberts debate. People talked about executive privilege in documents. Secondly, it is important that we maintain executive privilege in the White House. That's part of the deliberative process. That's how I'm able to get good, sound opinions from people. And so, you know, I'm sure they're going to try to bring this up. I happen to view it as a distraction from whether or not Harriet Myers is capable of answering the questions she's asked. You can ask all the questions they want. It's a distraction from whether or not she'll be a good judge. But we, this part of the process was part of the Roberts process. We handled this issue, and I just can't tell you how important it is for us to guard executive privilege in order for there to be crisp decision-making in the White House. John. Yeah, you.
Thank you, sir. It may be a little early for this, but now that you've gotten your deliberations for the Supreme Court vacancy out of the way, can you talk about the process you're going to use for determining the next chairman of the Federal Reserve?
Yeah, it's ongoing, by the way. There is a group of people inside the White House who are bringing forth, or who will bring forth, nominees. These are people that the nominees will be people that, one, obviously can do the job, and secondly, will be independent. It's important that whomever I pick is viewed as an independent person from politics. It's this independence of the Fed that gives people not only here in America but the world confidence. And so there's an ongoing process, John, right now. I frankly hadn't seen any names yet, because they're part of the process is to, you know, surface some names internally. But also part of the process is to reach outside the White House and solicit opinions. I'll name the person at appropriate time. Holly.
Thank you, Mr. President. As you know, ethics has been a hot topic here in Washington. I wonder, as a matter of principle, do you believe it is ever okay for a member of your administration or a member of Congress to accept free gifts or travel from lobbyists?
Let me answer your question this way. It's not acceptable for any member of my administration to break the law. And I presume free gifts from lobbyists break the law. And there's all kind of reporting requirements. And I expect my people to adhere to the people that work here to adhere to the to what's expected of them. Joe.
You said a few minutes ago that you're proudly conservative, but there was a lot of hand-wringing when you made your nomination yesterday of Harriet Myers. Bill Kristol said he was depressed and demoralized, and Rush Limbaugh said it was a nomination out of weakness. What do you say to these critics specifically, and how can you convince them that that she is as conservative as Justices Scalia and Thomas?
I guess I'll start over. I hope they're listening. First, she's a woman of enormous accomplishment. She understands the law. She's got a keen mind. She will not legislate from the bench. I also remind them that I think it's important to bring somebody from outside the judicial system, that somebody from that hasn't been on the bench. And therefore, there's not a lot of opinions for people to look at. Harriet Myers will testify. There's going to be a lot of attention paid to her testimony. First of all, she'll go meet with the senators individually. And then she'll answer questions. And people will get to see not only her strength of character, but we'll get a sense of her judicial philosophy. Hopeful she'll get confirmed, and then they'll get to read her opinions. And they're going to speculate. I don't have to guess and speculate about Harriet. I know her character, I know her strength, I know her talent, and I know she's going to be a fine judge. Bill.
Thank you, Mr. President. You've spoken a lot today about knowing Ms. Myers and knowing her history and knowing what she's about. Earlier this summer, you stood up for Rafael Palmero when you were asked about whether or not you thought he took steroids, and then he tested positive. Do you think he should face perjury charges?
I think that steroids ought to be banned from baseball. And Jackson asked me, sitting right over there, about his statement. And I said I believed him when he testified. But let me be very clear about this. Steroids ought to be banned from baseball. And I'm sure the Congress will look as to whether or not he broke the law. Richard.
Mr. President.
Yes.
In our latest poll.
Do what?
In our latest poll.
Latest poll?
Yeah, our latest poll.
Gosh, okay.
I know you don't pay attention to polls, but anyway, in our latest
You run one every other day.
I know.
You mean yesterday's poll?
Yesterday.
As opposed to tomorrow's poll. Go ahead. What is a good way to fill space, Richard?
85% of the Republicans approve of the job you're doing, but only 15% of the Democrats approve of the job you're doing. What is it about that the Democrats find so objectionable?
Ask the pollsters. My job is to lead and to solve problems. I will continue to articulate as best I can the stakes in Iraq. Iraq's a part of a global war on terror. We're facing people who have got a vision of the world which is opposite of ours. I know I've said that endlessly, and I will continue to say it because I know it's true. And they have designs. They like the idea of being able to find safe haven in a country like Afghanistan so they can plot attacks. They like the idea of killing innocent people to shake our will. That's what they're trying to do. We're not leaving Iraq. We will succeed in Iraq. Secondly, I've got a job to help promote economic vitality. And I was pleased to see the manufacturing report was strong yesterday. But clearly we've got some challenges when it comes to energy. And there are two ways to address the energy issue. One is through better conservation and encouraging technologies to change how we use energy. And secondly, to increase supply of energy. One place we need to increase supply is through the refineries. Another place we need to do so is through safe nuclear power. I had an interesting opportunity to go see some research and development being done on solar energy. I'm convinced, you know, someday in the relative near future, we'll be able to, you know, have units on our houses that will be able to power our electronics within our houses, and hopefully with excess energy be able to feed them back into the system. That's possible. We're not there yet, but it's coming. Thirdly, we got to deal with Katrina in a fiscally sound way. And I repeat what I said before, the engine of growth in these areas that have been destroyed is going to be the private sector, and therefore Congress ought to get a bill to my desk that I can sign that encourages investment. If you want the private sector to thrive, there is a way to do so, and that is to provide tax incentives to people. It's amazing what happens when there's proper tax incentive to encourage investment. And so these are issues that we're dealing with, and, you know, I'm dealing with them on behalf of everybody. And I'll let you all sort out the politics.
You've been listening to live coverage of a press conference by President Bush from Washington, provided to us from National Public Radio. This is AM 580 WILL Urbana. And good morning now. Welcome to Focus 580. We'll try and get back on our regular schedule here. Glad to have you listening this morning. My name is David Inge. Back here after a while. I think I remember how to do this. I'm not exactly sure. And I'm sure that if I've forgotten, this morning's guest, who's been here many times before, can just take over. Sandy Mason is here. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday is here, and we talk about lawn and garden care. And that means we're open to whatever questions that you have. We've talked about a lot of things. We've talked about stuff you can eat and things that are ornamental, trees, shrubs, grass, vegetables, flowers, houseplants, any and all those sorts of things. Maybe you still have some sort of problem you're dealing with. Maybe you are already thinking about what you would like to plant next year. Any and all of that is certainly welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Thanks for being here again.
Good morning.
You brought with you some information in response to a question that somebody had asked when you were here last time, and you apparently said,
yes.
Tune in next time. Now, I don't know if this person is listening or not. However,
well, hopefully they have the information. Hopefully they are. Yeah. Because sometimes I just felt like maybe there was more to the story. And it was a gentleman that had called. He had a vine, an annual vine. It's mm-hmm. called Spanish Flag. It's a Minna lobata. It's actually the genus species on it. And it's gotten to be, you know, more and more people have gotten interested in these annual vines. So it'd be things like, you know, even Morning Glories. There's the Black-Eyed Susan vine. There's lots of these annual vines. And his question was, he's got this plant, the Spanish Flag, in full sun on his mailbox, and it seemed to be growing well, had all this foliage, but it just wasn't flowering, right, which is the thing we'd like for it to do. So I thought, well, I'll do a little bit of checking just to find out. And the interesting thing was, I thought this was very interesting, you know, if we think back to things like chrysanthemums and poinsettias, they're called short day plants, short day, long night. And so they actually respond to how much of the daylight they have. And so for things like poinsettias and chrysanthemums, they have to have a short day, long night. Well, come to find out, this Minna lobata, the Spanish flag, is also a short day plant. So if you think about what's going on in the summertime, when do we finally start getting short days? Well, you know, we have long and long and long days, and our longest, as far as daylight, is June 21st. After June 21st, then we start getting shorter and shorter daylight. And so the point is, as I check through this, there actually, the literature that I was reading said it's very difficult to even get them to flower before September. So it should start flowering now. But the other thing I thought of is that if he has lights on outside, mm-hmm. that could be enough to actually keep it from flowering too. So if he's got this near a light pole or an outdoor light of some kind, it actually is another thing. Again, it needs short days, long nights. And if that's getting interrupted by daylight, some type of light, street light or whatever, then it may not flower because of that. So maybe, hopefully he's listening, and maybe that'll be, he'll think of that in the future.
All right. Very good. Well, otherwise, questions are welcome. 333-9455 here for Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line, 800-222-9455. And we have a couple of people here ready to go. First caller is in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Yes, I have a shrub that I purchased 2 years ago. I was told it was some kind of willow. It now looks like a corkscrew willow. Mm-hmm. And they told me when I bought it that it was a shrub and it should grow. It could grow actually all the way up to 30 feet. But mm-hmm. they said, go ahead and trim it. Just trim it. Well, last year we trimmed it and it tripled in size. So now I have a tree next to my house.
Mm-hmm.
What is a good time to transplant that?
You know, actually with that, how long has it been there? A couple of years, you said?
Like a year and a half,
maybe. Yeah. Well, you could either do a couple of things. The one thing with willows is they'll actually root very easily from cuttings, just stem cuttings. And I've even taken corkscrew willows where I wanted to prop something up, and I just thought they'd look cool because they're a nice little corkscrew thing. So I put them around some perennials to hold them up, and the darn things rooted. So then I had these little forest of corkscrew willows. But that tells you how easily they root. So you can just cut off the stems and move those around if you want to. Or if you wanted to go ahead and transplant it, you could certainly do that now if you wanted to.
Oh, that's very helpful. Thank you very mm-hmm. much.
All right. Thanks for the call. I know someone who had some corkscrew willow that came in a flower arrangement. Mm-hmm. And just for the heck of it, they took it out of the arrangement, took it, stuck it in the backyard. And
they're amazing.
Then they ended up with this huge corkscrew
yes.
willow
yes,
as a result.
Yes, I believe it. I truly believe it. Yeah. Yes. They're tough.
Okay. Line two, Urbana. Hello.
Hi. I recently planted some bare spots in my lawn with a new kind of lawn seed that I found from, I don't know who makes it. It says Barenberg. I found it in one of the local hardware stores, and it says that it's Water Saver Turf Type Tall Fescue Lawn Seed mm-hmm. Blend with RTF. RTF stands for, let's see what it stands for. It says it's a new type of tall fescue which produces rhizomes, and that they'll till through the soil to spread the plant underground and form new growth. It's called self-repairing. Mm-hmm. I thought this all sounded pretty good. Is it? Do you have any idea if this lives up to its hype?
Usually the turf type tall fescues have been around for a while. I'm not sure that I'm familiar with that particular one, but they've been around for a long time, and we have certainly mentioned them when it comes to low, what we might consider low maintenance lawns, as in lawns where you're not going to be fertilizing on a regular basis, or maybe not at all, and you're not going to be watering on a regular basis, because it seems to be a much tougher grass in the sense it doesn't need the extra water and stuff like we think of with Kentucky bluegrass or the fertilizer. So it sounds like a great lawn grass. And it is. The only thing I will tell you is that, did you put this in within a Kentucky bluegrass lawn, or?
Well, who knows?
Well, the only thing I would mention is with the turf-type tall fescues, the color is not the same as Kentucky bluegrass. You know, Kentucky bluegrass has that kind of dark blue-green color that people really like. The turf-type tall fescues tend to be much on the lighter side, more like an emerald green, and sometimes people don't like the way those two look together, and also because the turf-type tall fescue tends to have a much wider leaf blade, it just looks a little bit different than Kentucky bluegrass. So generally what we'd recommend is that if you're going to have a tall fescue lawn, it's have a tall fescue lawn, and don't really mix the two between Kentucky bluegrass and fescue, only because of just aesthetic purposes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the idea of this self-repairing business.
Sure. I mean, it's great. And it is a tougher lawn. You'll notice that it grows much faster than you'll see. When there is rain, it'll grow faster than the bluegrass. It's. I have one part of my lawn that's in tall fescue.
Hmm. Okay. Well, we'll try it out and we'll see how it goes in a year or so. Growing just fine at the moment. Thanks a bunch.
Yeah, right, you'll have to let us know how it works for you.
Okay.
We go on to Aurora. Here's caller in Aurora, line number 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Yes, hi. Good morning again.
Good morning.
Wondered if you could give me information about how to root Russian sage.
Wow. I'm not sure I know how to root. You know, it's so woody.
Yes, and I've tried several times in different ways. And I just thought, I kind of gave up, and then when I heard your voice, I said, well, maybe she could give me a hint. Right. I know it is. Right. It is woody.
Yeah, it's very woody. I think probably if I was going to try it, I'd probably... Did you try any of the rooting hormones, those little powder stuff, like root tone?
You know, I tried for a couple of years now, and I don't know what route I've gone down, but I'll go down that route again.
Okay. I would look for something with that rooting hormone and then take cuttings that way. And I'm not sure if this time of year you might have better success in the spring. Mm-hmm. They don't move very... The plants themselves, I don't know if you've noticed, they don't really move all that well. And they don't divide all that well. So it makes it a little bit harder compared to some of the other plants that we have. But I think I would probably be more apt to go with some spring cuttings, you know, when it's growing well, and then using some rooting hormone and probably doing it in a protective site or even indoors would work well. And then
okay,
go
so
from
I
there.
Go with next spring.
Yeah, you can certainly try it now. I'm just guessing because it is so woody that you might have better success when it's actively growing.
Well, I'll try next spring.
Okay.
Thank
Good
you
luck.
So much. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Well, other questions are certainly welcome. We're talking this morning with Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County. And once a month, she's on the program here. Talk about lawn care. Yes? Yeah.
I did happen to think of one other thing with that Russian sage. You know, I'm thinking now, because I've actually noticed one of mine do that, is that with some of that woody stuff, if you take one of the branches, and you don't want to break it off, but if they're supple enough, you can actually bend them down, and you just barely nick the stem where you're going to stick it into the soil. It's called layering, and you keep it attached to the main plant, but I think I've even seen that done, and I think mine has sort of done it on its own. So I would try layering. And that might be, and you could even do that now. Okay. So that might be another thing if she's still listening to try.
Okay. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We've got somebody here, I think, on the road, line number 1. Hello.
Yes, I was wondering if you had any hints about getting a wisteria to bloom, and I'll hang up and listen.
Yelling. Screaming.
It does not help to yell at the plants.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I'm pretty well convinced, and I've talked to a lot of different people. You know, we've said all kinds of things when it comes to Wisteria, but that is by far the plant I hear the most often when people say, I just can't get the crazy thing to bloom. And we'll mention everything from root pruning, which is something you can try. You're basically trying to stress the plant. You do some root pruning, you just take a spade and you'd actually cut some of the roots. I've seen it listed that you actually should prune them 3 times a year. You want to cut off a lot of the growth, almost like you're pruning grapes. And to do that. Now, the other thing that I've decided after talking to lots and lots and lots of people is find one that's blooming. Just find one. I would say just actually replacing the plant is what I've finally come up with. And there's actually a new one called Amethyst Falls, which I've seen. It's actually blooming. It's blooming in the pot. It's blooming when you buy it. And so I would look for those wisterias that are already blooming in the pot, and then you know they're going to bloom for you. I think the other ones, for one reason or other, either the soil's too rich or something's going on, they're just very cantankerous and they don't want to bloom. And my feeling is life is too short. I'm just not going to wait for this wisteria. So those would be my comments. Either stress it or go out and replace it with one that you know is going to flower for you.
Okay. Chicago, next. Line 4. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Thanks.
Uh-huh.
We got a place down by south of Belleville, Millstead, and 100 acres, and my wife is trying to plant an enormous garden. The problem is, over the years, that we have these extreme changes in climate. You know, it's either raining like a rainforest and you just have tons of water, or it just dries out like a bone. And on really large garden areas, it kind of gets impractical to be constantly watering things. I was wondering, you see these things, these stuff sold, these water-holding, absorbing pellets. Has anybody experimented with the idea of going around your garden and drilling like maybe 2-foot-deep holes and pouring, you know, like with a bulb planter, and pouring that stuff in and covering it up so that you would sort of create a sponge everywhere.
Now, what is it that you're trying to grow? Are you trying vegetables or flowers?
No, mostly bulbs, you know, expensive bulbs from the White Flower catalog.
Oh, okay. Okay, got you. And so the problem is that either they're drying out too much, you feel like, or I guess I'm not sure.
I think that's mostly it, is that you get these. I mean, it turns into like a desert for periods of time. And then, you know, it'll rain like inch after inch every week. So I think it's the new Republican climate we've got. But
I'm not going there. But then you feel like the bulbs just don't come back very well then?
Yeah, and they're pretty happy if I keep the stuff watered, but it's just getting more and more difficult to water these fairly large bulb patches remote from the faucets and everything.
Okay. But you're talking about daffodils, tulips, things like that, or lilies, or? I'm sorry.
Tulips usually the deer get, but and the lilies, nothing bothers them. They don't care. They're happy anyway, whatever you do to them. But other more weird stuff, I don't know.
Okay. Well, the reason I was asking is that actually for some of those bulbs, they don't mind a dry period. And actually, when they're in their dormancy during the summer, it's not bad really for them to be dry, because that's normally what would have happened in their native climates anyway. So that's why I was trying to get an idea of really what the problem is. Have you tried mulching too?
We try and do plenty of that. Obviously, that'll keep some of the evaporation down.
And it really does help.
What the most effective way to like kind of retain water and not have to constantly pump it back over there.
Right. Well, I would certainly think about if there's ways to add compost. You know, any of the organic matters are really going to help to hold on to moisture. Mulching, you know, wood chips, those kinds of things are certainly going to help. Certainly those polymers, you know, they can be used out in the landscape situations. I've seen them used very effectively with things like impatiens.
Maybe they're kind of expensive and it's only worthwhile if you've got a little pot.
You bet. And that's I've seen it used just on certain plants, like impatiens. You know, they're water hogs, you know, tough to grow sometimes. So
like her mums. The mums just, you know, I just don't think they can take these long, really dry periods.
Right. Well, especially if they're good-sized pots. But, again, the compost, the mulch. But certainly with the mums, I would think about using those polymers. And you actually work it within the soil. You wouldn't necessarily make a pocket, but you just work it into the planting area.
Right.
And on small areas like that, you may find that's very helpful.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Okay, well, thanks for the call. We will continue. And the next person in line here is someone in Champaign, line 1. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have inherited a clipping of a bamboo plant from a friend who got it in a flower arrangement. And it's just you know, the stalk, and it's just in a vase with you know, marbles at the bottom to so it stands up straight.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got it, it wasn't doing anything, and I put it in some light and kept the water level regular, and it just took off.
Mm-hmm.
And now suddenly, one of the stalks is just getting paler and paler and paler green, and the tips of the leaves are starting to dry from the bottom up. And I'm not sure, it doesn't look good, I just am not sure what's wrong with it. And I wondered if you might, you know, is it too crowded in there and strangling? Do you have any idea what's mm-hmm. wrong with it?
Yeah, it did. Is there a time period there where it could have dried out a little bit too much?
I don't think so, because okay. I'm pretty good about keeping the water level regular.
Okay,
you know?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, usually those don't take a whole lot. I'm not sure if they're really, boy, you know, because they're growing in water like that, I'm not sure. It almost sounds like a fertilization thing, but it gets a little harder when you're actually dealing right with, you know, just growing them in water like that. You might, if it's getting particularly big, you may think about dividing that or even cutting part of it off. I mean, they root so easily, those little stumps, I guess, is more or less what they are.
Yeah.
And you may find you want to do some of that just to help invigorate it. I'm not sure I've ever seen that anybody's ever fertilized it. Yeah, I don't know how that would work. You might use a very dilute, you know, water-soluble fertilizer with it
okay.
and see if you can get it to green up that way.
Okay. So when you talk about separating it, would I just, you know, sort of gently lift it out of the little marble mm-hmm. thing at the bottom and then just pull apart?
Yeah, you can cut it apart.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're really tough. They're about like those willows we were just talking about,
yeah.
where, you know, the little sections of them just root like crazy. So
okay.
it's kind of tough to kill them.
And then just put it in a similar, you know, water mm-hmm. situation?
Yeah, you might try, and that would be the other thing, is just I don't know how often you're able to clean it out. That may be the other thing, because sometimes they actually get some of the roots will die and it'll
get gunky. Yeah.
Yeah, it gets gunky. Yeah, that's a good term. And so that may be one of the things, too, that you really want to do this time to sort of clean it out. And that would certainly be, if there's a little bit of rot, that certainly could do that, too.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's it, because it really grew a lot quickly,
yep.
and it is looking kind of funky in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll try those things.
Okay.
I didn't want it to go away because it's really pretty. Thanks a lot.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Good
Thank
luck.
You. Let's see. We'll talk with someone next on Terre Haute, line number 2. You're on here. Hello.
Good morning. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Pretty good.
Good. Hey, I got a question about plug aerating. You know, when I go on golf courses, I see they plug aerate them. I was thinking mm-hmm. about doing that to my yard because I'm sure I have tons of thatch, but I have more weeds than grass in my yard. So I thought about plug aerating it and then laying down grass seed. And I wondered if that would be an appropriate way of doing it or if there's a better method.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a couple of things. You can check and see how much thatch you have. You know, just take out a pocket knife or whatever and just cut out a little plug and pull it out. And you'll see the thatch. It's just, it's in between. It's that spongy layer in between the soil itself and then the grass blades. And it shouldn't be more than a half inch. You start getting more than a half inch, then you start having some real issues there. So you can check that yourself and really find out if that's part of the problem. If it is part of the problem, then core aerifying could certainly be something, a route you want to go. And then you certainly could do some seeding after that if you want to go that route. If it seems like you don't really have that much thatch, then I might be more inclined to use something like a slit seeder. Do you know those? It's actually some equipment that you can rent or have somebody do it for you, but it actually cuts slits into the sod itself and then drops the seed in, and you get much better seed-to-soil contact. And that's what you really need in an existing lawn. So you may want to try that. The other thing is if you look through there and you find it, well, you know, I really have some decent grass in there, it's just I have an awful lot of weeds, maybe you really want to concentrate right now on actually taking care of the weed problems and perhaps doing a broadleaf herbicide application. It's not too late to do that. And maybe see if you can get rid of some of the weeds and then encourage some grass growth from there, and then you might find you actually have more grass there than you realize. So you kind of have to evaluate it. Pardon?
It's okay to go ahead and apply the broadleaf weed killer now?
Sure. Actually, we often think of only spring, but really October is really an excellent time to take care of a lot of the perennial weeds, things like dandelions, creeping charlie, a lot of those. And actually, many times it can even be better because they're getting ready, they're storing food for the winter, and it's a perfect opportunity for them to also take in the herbicide.
Okay, yeah, because I have tons of clover and I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds like it's time to sort of reevaluate and sort of decide from there what route you want to go, but sort of decide on a plan of action, and over the next year or so, you can find that you can take care of a lot of it.
Okay, well, thanks for your help today.
All right, thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
So just to recap there, that it is not too late to do weed control.
No.
Or also to fertilize for a fall fertilization?
Yeah, your last fertilization normally we say is usually in November. Usually thinking about after the last mowing of the season, you can actually go ahead and fertilize. And so normally that ends up being about November or so. And that would certainly be your last application for the year. And then we would not recommend an application in April. You'd wait until May, because that November application would take care of that early green up in the spring.
All right. We have about 10-12 minutes left with Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's with us once a month to talk about lawn and garden care, and questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Next is someone on cell phone, line 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Yeah. Sure.
I have a question about lawn also. We had a big section of lawn die off this summer, probably, I think, mostly from the heat. There weren't any grubs or, there didn't seem to be any disease. It just kind of dried up and flew away. We were thinking of replacing it with either sod or seed, and I'm wondering how late in the fall we can do either of those. And I'll hang up and listen if that's okay.
Okay, that's fine.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. You know, sod gives you more options in the sense of how late you can do it. Sod, generally, you can really do it well through October, even into November, depending on what the soil temperatures are. So at sod, you have a lot more options there as when you can apply, when you can put it down. Seed, we're at the point now where I don't think I would put down, I would spend a lot of money at this point. We're getting, usually we say through the month of September, we're getting into October now, or so we're getting a little late, but it's really warm now. So if we maintain this high soil temperatures and this warm weather, then we could probably stretch it into October, where normally we wouldn't say that. So we're getting a little bit riskier as we get into October when it comes to seeding. The advantages of seeding, of course, is that you can select what seed you want. So that's the good stuff. Whereas in sod, you often don't have too many choices. So with seed, you can get much more specific to the area. You can make sure you get several different cultivars. You can get Kentucky bluegrass with perennial ryegrass and a couple cultivars of it. So you have a little bit more option when it comes to the type of seed. So you kind of just have to decide what route you want to go. But certainly sod, you can take it longer into the season.
Okay. Apparently, it's going to continue to be warm at least today and tomorrow. But then it looks like it's going to
it's going
to get chilly. Well, at least for I think what we're expecting is there going to be a fairly significant drop off in temperature. So we're talking about going from highs in the 80s, well, near 90 today, 84 tomorrow, says Mike Sola. But then we're looking at highs only here, maybe in the 60s.
Yeah. See,
starting on Thursday. So
what we would love to see is this gradual, not just because of us, but because of the plants too. They need that kind of gradual, getting ready for winter, getting ready for the dormancy. And this is tough on them when they go from this really hot to.
Yeah.
So people need to make sure they keep things watered. I mean, as long as the ground isn't frozen, if they've got evergreens and stuff, make sure they keep them watered.
Okay. Next is caller in Mattoon. Line 4. Hello.
Hi. Just the caller who had the bamboo and the lucky bamboo. I'm wondering about the greening problem. One of the things that I've run on with that, too, is also depends on the quality of the water that you use to water it.
Oh.
In Mattoon, we have extremely hard water, and I had trouble with mine and went to using distilled water and haven't had any problems since then. And, yeah, and as far as the muck, every so often I just dump all the water out and start it from fresh. And you can also, if you mix up a fairly mild mixture, concentration of Miracle-Gro.
Yeah, I wonder about that.
That dissolves very easily in water.
Good.
And add that when you water it, once in a while.
Oh, good point. I hadn't even thought about, I would think with a lot of the pH of some of the water, the city water, and stuff. Oh, good point. I'm glad you brought that up. Hopefully she's still listening.
Okay.
So, great. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Well, you've got several people here in line. They're all in Champaign. We will take them in the order they came in, 1, 2, 3, starting with line 1. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Questions about planting arborvitae, or is it vita?
Arborvitae is fine.
Okay. Uh-huh. Well, we've looked around. We've noticed that some of them just die immediately from people who put them in.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've heard it's better to do it you know, either spring or fall. We've heard both.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to get an idea as to when we should do it, how we should prepare the soil, and, you know, should it be in a well-drained area, you know, all those questions.
Mm-hmm.
How best to go about doing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are nice evergreen, you know, if you want something that's fairly upright, and I know people like to use them for screens and such. The one thing is, for sure, they really don't like shade all that much, so they really need full sun. So they're better off in full sun.
That's the easiest where we think we want to put
them. Okay, so that's good. They do need well-drained soil.
Okay.
They don't like to sit in water, like a lot of evergreens, or most of the evergreens we have. So they have to be well-drained. And the other thing is that I've noticed with those, and I've planted a few myself, is that they don't seem to have much of a root system when they're bald and burlapped and when they're dug and stuff. And I think the biggest problem is people don't water them enough when they put them in. They water them once a week, and that I think it's just not enough with those big plants.
Watering. Now, would it be okay to do it within the next month, or should we wait till the spring?
I would have no problem with doing it now. I probably wouldn't wait too much later into October, but I wouldn't have a problem doing it now. And often, you know, especially with evergreens, as long as the soil isn't frozen, they actually can do a certain amount of putting down roots, and, you know, so it really isn't bad for them.
Okay.
Normally. So I would do that, but just really watch the soil, you know, put your hand down there, see if it's wet. If it's wet, then you know you don't need to water, but boy, just really watch how often you water them.
So will mulching be something very critical? Or?
Yes, I would definitely mulch them. Okay. You know, about 3 inches of a wood chip type mulch to help keep in the moisture and keep it more even. Mm-hmm.
Okay. 3 inches is a good
yep, one. I'd okay. really, yeah.
Okay, so how about some plants to go around? Because we want to do kind of the, you know, a little height and then a little bit something along the edge. Are there anything specific that would go well with that? Or
right.
that same area, kind of a lot of sun.
Mm-hmm.
If we do get the soil set up and then all the mulch, are there just any perennial or?
Yeah, are you looking for shrub perennial either way?
Yes, uh-huh.
Well, they certainly make great backdrops, I mean, for a lot of plants because of that evergreen foliage. And so pretty much anything you can put in front of them, I mean, it really does. They look nice. I think if you're looking for other shrubs, you know, I've never met a viburnum I didn't like. Some of them can get particularly large,
okay.
Depending on how you want to do that. But, you know, they're really very, very nice companions to a lot of the, you know, as far as making a shrub border, that's great. I would just think about that kind of dark green foliage of the arborvitae and just make sure whatever you put in front of it has enough texture difference and enough color difference with its leaves that it's going to stand out.
I see. Okay. Because that does get pretty dark.
Yeah.
And the last question is about a star magnolia.
Mm-hmm.
In the past couple of weeks, we've noticed a lot of these little red things, which we figure are seeds.
Mm-hmm.
That are pot. We've never seen that before. It's been in there for about 3-4 years now, going on 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And do we just let them fall? Is it going to cause, or are we getting a lot of roots up there? Should we gather them and take them away if we don't want anything more? Or
yeah, I really wouldn't worry about them, to be honest with you. I think the birds actually like to eat them.
Oh, okay.
I'm with you. I generally with the magnolias, I don't see a whole lot of them produced. I'm not sure I've ever seen a seedling produced from them.
Okay.
So I think either the birds are getting them or they just don't do very well as
We're
far
okay
as a seedling.
Because there's just tons of them this year. We don't know if because the weather's been so different this year versus others or what.
They got pollinated better this year for one reason
back
or another. Yeah, yeah. So better bee activity.
Flowering in the spring.
Mm-hmm. So it's that's fine. I really wouldn't worry about it too much, but I'd watch it. I think you might be surprised you get some birds coming in that might be fun to watch.
Okay, very good. Okay, mm-hmm. Thanks so much.
All right, thank you. Another Champagne person. This is line number 2, also Champagne. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Can you hear me fine?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I've got hundreds of questions. I'm finally able to listen to you because I'm now retired. But my first question has to do with our upcoming weather and a couple tomato plants, Better Boys, that we have that are still producing and have a huge number of green tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Is it better to try to cover the plants up and get them through the cool and let the tomatoes stay on the vine? Or would you recommend taking as many off and trying to do something else, and what something else would that be?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you know, we're getting to the point now where, October 4th, our mm-hmm. average date of first frost is normally the mid-October, so we're not that far off from getting a frost, to be honest with you.
Right.
As long as the weather's warm like this, you know, they can still go ahead and ripen and stuff on the vine. If we start getting into those 60-degree days and stuff, they're really not going to ripen very fast mm-hmm. anyway. So you're better off, if we start getting to the cooler weather, I think you're better off just to go ahead and pick them. And they will ripen indoors, even though they're green. They don't have quite the flavor, but they're still good. And I've had people where they go ahead and you can actually just pack them, you know, put newspaper. If you have a bunch of them, you just pack them in newspaper and just lay them out flat. You don't want to have a whole lot of them on top or just two rows. And you actually just can put them in a, you know, put them in the basement or wherever and just let them ripen that way if you want to.
They don't need sun anymore.
No, they actually don't need sun to ripen. Believe it or not, but you can do that. So I'd kind of watch the weather, but you know, it probably isn't going to help a whole lot to cover them if we stay in really cool weather.
So if it's not, if we're up in the 70s, you think leave them on the vine? If we're down in the 70s, take them off.
Yeah, if we're up in the 70s, I'd say great. You're still going to get a few that'll go ahead and ripen on the vine. Mm-hmm. And if it looks like, you know, it's going to get cold one night and then warm up the next day really well, then you may want to cover them at that point. But if it looks like the forecast is going to stay cool, you know, for a long time after that, I think I'd go ahead and pick them and not worry about them.
All right. Thanks so much. Mm-hmm. I'll be looking forward to listening to the show into the future.
All great. Right.
Well, thank you. We'll get one more caller. Champagne also. Line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
You may have solved or given me a clue to a problem I've been having. We have a little garden in the front of our house that faces the south. The last couple of years, it just seems to sit there and not do anything, no matter what I do, how I fertilize it. And I was wondering if it has to do with the light that we get. We have a street light. So the plants are never in total darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Does that affect them? I mean, not even geraniums are growing.
Yeah. It really depends on the plant. I mean, some plants are what's called day neutral, and they don't care. They don't care what the day length is. And yeah, they're fine. They'll just take in whatever sunlight's there or whatever and actually appreciate it for the most part. But then there are some, as I was talking about that vine, is they will not flower. I guess the thing I'd wonder about that area is, have you had a chance to get a soil test?
Well, the thing is, yes, I did test the soil. But also the things that were in pots that had brand new soil, new plants, they're not even doing anything. First, I thought it was the soil, and I thought, well, then that can't be, surely, because it was that potting soil that's got the fertilizer in it. I don't know. It seemed like they didn't do well at all.
Now, it was particularly hot this year, obviously, but you've said this.
They were watered, and they were bathed.
Right.
And the blooms were cut off when they didn't look good. And the only thing that we had that saved us this year were our daisies. I had salvia and oh, gosh, the yarrow did okay, but I don't like it very much anyway. So I'm thinking about getting rid of that.
The ones we don't like always do well. That's always the case. Well, I think the one thing, though, even though they were watered and all that stuff, is that if it's really hot, some plants just absolutely shut down. If it gets much above 85 degrees for long periods of time, they kind of shut down, and they don't do it, even if they have water there.
Okay.
So sometimes it may not be anything that you're doing whatsoever.
But it's been 2 or 3 years now.
Oh, it's still doing that even without the... Yeah.
Because you'd see that I would have this pretty little garden in front, and then a lot of the perennials would come back and look nice, and I don't know. I'm about ready to give up, except they look so pretty when they do.
Yeah, I would really think about, you know, amending the soil if you've added compost, you know, mulching, those kinds of things. Kind of go back to square one when we think about good, you know, flower gardening and see if that doesn't help to encourage some growth on some things.
Well, I got to jump in here. Yeah. My apologies, but we've got to go for this time around. Sandy will be back next month. We'll talk some more. Sandy Mason, horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here every month. We do lawn and garden care. Thanks.
Thank you.
Programming here made possible by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds. It's distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. Programs also made possible by a grant from Christopher